when Wallace was elected his last term as governor. I was elected my first term in the legislature. Ironically, my district included Wallace's hometown of Clayton in Barber County. I'd grown up paging the Alabama legislature. I'd gotten to know Wallace, and he was governor most of that time. He loved to remind me that he'd been a page like me when he was a teenager. He'd paged for Governor Chauncey Sparks of Barber County. It amused him that I now was a grown 30-year-old man rather than a page and just been elected his representative. After he won the Democratic primary, his election was actually assured in the fall because being the Democratic nominee was still a lock for election in Alabama. However, he had a viable Republican opponent in Montgomery Mayor Emory Farmer, who had staked out a position as a racist like Wallace had earlier. However, a rich man's racist cannot beat a poor man's racist. I knew the election would not be close. Meanwhile, a contentious race was brewing for Speaker of the House. The very conservative Speaker of the House, Joe McCorkadale of Clark County, was retiring after 12 years. His chief lieutenant was his fellow black belt conservative, Rick Manley from Demopolis. Manley was a lawyer and a skilled parliamentarian. He was the heir apparent and the conservative groups like the Farm Bureau back in Manley. At the same time, the Alabama Education Association was feeling its political oats. AEA's executive secretary, Paul Hubbard, had built a reputation as the strongest lobbyist on Goat Hill. He had elected and developed a Tuscaloosa teacher principal named Roy Johnson. He trained Johnson and made him a legislative leader. Hubbard and AEA wanted Roy Johnson to be their speaker. The gigantic battle was on between two powerful lobbying groups, AEA and Farm Bureau. They were organizing and garnering votes with a devout passion. Both sides had about 35 votes lined up in the 105-member House, and 35 of us remained uncommitted. We were the battleground. I told both sides I was uncommitted. Both had endorsed me. Unbeknownst to them, I was committed. I'd grown up in the legislature. I knew the governor had always been involved in electing his man as speaker. In addition, I knew George Wallace, and I knew he was not going to relinquish his power easily. I also knew the governor had a lot of power and patronage. I also was cognizant of the fact that I was going to be Wallace's representative, and I knew how much he appreciated loyalty. So I went to Wallace and committed to him early on that I was for his choice of speaker. He smiled and showed his appreciation and affection for my commitment. He said, "You know, Steve, I've got this race with Emory Farmer before we can get to that, but I appreciate your commitment and we'll get with you after the election." Well, the battle for speaker raged on. I was bombarded daily. Wallace disposed of Farmer in the general election. The organizational session was looming with election of speaker first on the agenda. With Wallace's aura and experience, it should have been obvious to both sides that he'd be a major player in the speaker's race. About a week before the vote, my phone rang about midnight, and Governor Wallace says, "Steve, you're one of the first legislators we're calling. Hold on a second. I want you to talk to somebody." He handed the phone to longtime Coleman representative Tom Drake. Drake was said to be so loyal to Wallace that if Wallace asked him to jump off the top of the Capitol, Drake was only asking what time he was supposed to jump. Drake said, "I'm going to be governor's choice of speaker, Steve. Are you with me?" I said, "Mr. Drake, I don't know you, but if you're the governor's choice, I'm with you." Well, Drake won. This commitment of Governor Wallace did help me immensely with the Wallace administration. I never had a better relationship with the governor than I did those 4 years with Wallace.
Thank you all for listening.